12, Morro Bay National Estuary Program Update.
Yes.
Mr. Thomas.
Presenting this item will be Dominic Rock and Dan Berman from the Morro Bay National Estuary Program.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I am Dominic Rock with the Water Board staff, and one of the privileges I enjoy as a staff member of the Regional Water Board is to represent our agency on the Executive Committee of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. In this role, I've had a great opportunity to observe and to participate in a very productive management program that really embodies the principles of watershed management. The estuary program is active from the headwaters to the mouth of the estuary, and from the policy level to the ground level, in pursuing water quality improvements for this key Central Coast watershed. So here to provide you with an update on the program is the very capable Estuary Program Director, Dan Berman.
If I can, I'd like to sit so I can run the PowerPoint show. Now we're on. Members of the board, my name's Dan Berman. I'm the Director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, and I thank you for this opportunity to provide a brief update on our work out in Morro Bay. See if I can... All right, technical challenges per usual. It's not talking, huh?
Uh-oh.
Maybe it'll...
There we go.
Hey, there we go.
Must be a huge file.
Thank goodness. Right. The estuary program, our sort of tagline is that we're working to protect and restore the Morro Bay estuary and watershed. We're one of 28 national estuaries in the entire country. I think one of your board members, Monica, as well as some of the folks in the audience were a key part of getting us that status as a national estuary. I'm going to be providing kind of a general update. I'm going to talk about water quality in Morro Bay and the watershed, and the efforts of the estuary program and all of our partners to improve water quality. I'm going to focus especially on our strong partnership with the regional board, some of those aspects, and I'll kind of touch on them as we go through, but include the Morro Bay Restoration Fund. The regional board staff have, we have always had a very strong connection with regional board staff. A number of staff folks were some of the key staff of the estuary program for many years, and they continue to participate in a variety of capacities with our program. Dominic serving on the Executive Committee, Bill Hoffman serving on our Implementation Committee, and then working closely a number of our programs. TMDLs are one of the core ways we are working in partnership with the regional board. The estuary program data is helping track implementation. It's helped drive some of the listings and hopefully some of the delistings in the future. And then the estuary program is playing a key role in implementing a number of TMDLs. We're also involved in stormwater. We're implementing some supplemental environmental projects that the board has helped direct towards work in the Morro Bay watershed. And we interact closely with the CCAMP program in terms of sharing monitoring data, databases, quality assurance programs, and just coordinating our monitoring efforts. And then, of course, the National Monitoring Program study that Cal Poly led, but the regional board were really a key partner in that, and that helped inform much of our work in the watershed. The program itself, we're non-regulatory. We're housed within a local nonprofit organization. The Bay Foundation of Morro Bay provides a sort of administrative structure to hire staff, enter into contracts, manage funds. But it's really, the estuary program itself is a partnership. When you're a non-regulatory program, that's really the only way to get anything done. We work to bring together a really diverse group of stakeholders and coordinate all the different efforts that are going on in the watershed. Our executive committee is representative of that kind of partnership approach. These are the 13 designated representatives, or at least where they're from, for our executive committee, including the regional board Dominic is serving in, the Bay Foundation, the Environmental Protection Agency, which oversees all of the national estuary programs, counties, local cities, local interests of a variety of kinds, and a simplified version of kind of an org chart. We have the Bay Foundation serving in this nonprofit role to hire staff and take on the administrative and legal liabilities. The executive committee, which we just looked at, deals with policy, work plans, vision for the program. And then the implementation committee is essentially a quarterly watershed meeting where we get everyone we can in the same room, share information about what we're doing, get input to what we should be doing. The whole program is centered around this management plan. It was 5 years in the making. We're about in year seven of implementation now. This is our guidance for what we do. It identifies 7 priority problems facing the Bay. These are problems throughout the region, throughout the country. Sedimentation is perhaps a little different. The asterisks here,
still got my pointer.
The asterisks indicate things that TMDLs are in place for in Morro Bay, sedimentation, bacterial problems, nutrient over-enrichment, and related problems with dissolved oxygen, and then metals, although I think that's going to be coming off the list if it hasn't already. Steelhead trout, we've sort of highlighted as an indicator species, and then habitat loss and freshwater flow are additional issues of concern. So how are we tackling these serious problems? It's really four approaches: protecting habitat and water quality through acquisitions, easements, restoring habitat and water quality, that takes many forms, education and outreach, both about the importance and significance of these resources and also about how people can make individual changes and political changes to improve the situation, and then monitoring and research so that we understand the system, so we know what's working and what's not working, so we can be more efficient and effective. This is a picture of our watershed. We're a little off the map here. We've got the Choro drainage, the Los Osos drainage going into the estuary. Red line is the watershed boundary. This, the green is sort of public lands, either state park, county golf, the Forest Service lands, as of roughly the early 1990s. And this is some of the work that's been accomplished since then. And the estuary program alone can't take credit for all of these. We've been involved in many of them. Some of the more notable ones, floodplain restoration and sediment capture projects at the terminus of both the main inputs. This is the Choro Flats project and the lower Los Osos wetlands projects. The Resource Conservation District really led those. This is the Mino Ranch Conservation Easement, 1,860 acres, effectively forming a buffer to prevent urban development from spreading into the Choro Valley from the city of Morro Bay. This is the former Hollister Peak Ranch, slated for a golf course at one point, is now a fish and game ecological reserve. The estuary program led the acquisition of both of these projects. There's been a very successful effort to implement a green belt around the community of Los Osos. And then the areas you see lit up along these stream corridors represent riparian fencing and, in many cases, more intensive restoration efforts in the streams and along the streams to improve habitat for steelhead, reduce erosion, and restore native riparian corridors. And if you'll indulge me with the back and forth, it looks like we've added almost a third in terms of kind of protected and restored lands. About 10 miles of creek corridor have been treated in one manner or another. These are a few of those projects, the Mino Ranch easement. Conservation easements increasingly seem like the efficient and effective way to go to preserve these working landscapes. This was an outright purchase of the ecological reserve, and we're working, one of our main projects right now on the restoration front is to develop and implement a detailed restoration plan along the whole riparian corridor, the Choro Creek. There's about a mile and a half of Choro Creek that flows through this property. Los Osos Greenbelt, this is really rare coastal dune habitat with a number of endangered species, many of which are found nowhere else. This is Butte Drive, about 18 acres along the shoreline of Morro Bay that's now part of the state park that would have been developed into million-dollar houses. And then some of our restoration projects, this is kind of a typical, unfortunately, typical seasonal creek in the Choro Creek watershed, Walters Creek. We came in and fenced the cattle out of the creek and planted thousands of native plants and did some really active and of heavy equipment erosion control at a number of sites. These are a few before and after pictures, 3 years after implementation of the project. This was the lone willow in the whole site, looking a little happier now. This site, it's a little bright in here, but these are about 15-foot vertical banks, and this was about an 8-foot just vertical drop. It was a head cut that was rapidly migrating upstream, just eating sediment out of the system. So we put in a series of boulders, step pools to stabilize that, laid back these banks, planted. This is sort of classic stream bank restoration work with a lot of vegetative work. These are like mattresses. You make sort of an interlacing willow lattice that you lay into the bank, and then willow's so great it just starts growing like mad.
Dan?
Yes, please. Going back
to the...
Yeah.
The goal here, though, was not to just to do the restoration of the creek. It's changing land management practices that cause these problems.
That's right. This, there's a couple ways to think about it. Most of the projects we do end up having a whole range of benefits. For the long term, what's going to make this project worthwhile is that working with Cal Poly, this on Cal Poly land, we've implemented this riparian fencing program where it's not going to be permanently off limits to cattle because that actually creates its own set of problems in terms of weed management in the long run, invasive species. But we've kept the cattle out for about 4 years, and then the plan is to do this flash grazing, they call it, with riparian systems where you bring the cattle in, but you bring them in for 24 hours twice a year. They eat down the weeds, they get back out, and it don't do any real damage to the native plants. And the ranchers like it to the extent that it's, they get the cattle like it. They get this really nutritious forage. They're moving their cattle around the landscape. And it's really tied with a larger grazing management approach of smaller pastures and moving the cattle around on the land. This is one of the projects that we've been working on just in the last year with the settlement funds out of the Supplemental Environmental Project related to the sewage plant here along Choro Creek, which thankfully is finally being rebuilt. I think it's going to be done this summer. And the trunk, the main line connecting the prison and the plant is actually where most of the sewage spills were happening, and you guys are well aware of the severity and decades over which that's been happening. Well, the funds that were assessed against the prison have been put to good use. Two main projects, this one, which is riparian fencing, sort of expanding on what you saw. We were looking at some stuff here. We're going to fence this entire little drainage, Walters Creek. We've got another project going on downstream. We're going to put some more fencing in upstream. This is on Camp San Luis property. We're making a lot of headway working with them. We're going to be putting this riparian fencing is going to get installed this spring. This is already in, and this is in fencing out a tributary to San Lacido. And we've had some really positive contacts with some private landowners upstream in San Lacido Creek, which has a really one of the more significant bacteria problems. Yes, this is Highway 1 running out to the coast. Morro Bay is basically just right here. Hollister Peak is right here. It's a little hard to see. And then this is the Cuesta campus, the National Guard camp.
Where's Kinney Road?
Kinney Road is right there. That blue dot represents one of our water quality sampling sites right at Kinney Road, right below Hollister Peak. The other main project that we've been, that's done essentially with the Supplemental Environmental Project is the Windy Cove area, Morro Bay. This has been an illegal mooring area for literally decades, essentially a dumping ground for boats. Some folks were just taking advantage of free mooring, but many were abandoning boats here, running meth labs on boats here. It was really a travesty. And Fish and Game is the agency in charge of the area. Long overdue in taking action on it, and partly because they didn't know how to deal with the problem of the boats in terms of funding. And so with the funding that we got from the CMC, this is the before and after picture of Windy Cove taken from the Museum of Natural History. About 28 boats are gone. Most of them left voluntarily. Well, I shouldn't say voluntarily. Most of them left on their own. We used the funds to take about 8 of them out of the bay and demolish them. And this is sort of typical condition for those boats. And looks like that. And a few minutes later, it looks like that. Just did it down at the Tidelands parking lot. So the funding actually went to was hiring these guys to come in with the heavy equipment and then all the disposal costs and hazardous waste costs associated with that. Well, that's what we were able to do here because of this funding that we had. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, and I, frankly, the answer is no. The bureaucratic hurdles to that are not dealt with. If we have the funds on hand, we can go ahead and do it in most cases, but this area was much easier to clean out than derelict boats in the legal part of the bay. Here they were illegally moored, and so Fish and Game could just say, you can't be here, you have to be gone in 30 days. Boats that have a legal owner and are moored in the city waters, even if they're obviously on the verge of sinking, it's very difficult to go after them. There's this whole marine law and navigation law of the seas where you have to go through a 90-day or more lien sale process. You have to hire a special lawyer. The other problem, which is a problem at the state level that I hope can be addressed, is that Fish and Game has a substantial cleanup fund. They have this whole department, the OSPR, but those funds, and there's lots of money sitting there, the way they've explained it to me is that those funds aren't available until the boat sinks. So we could get a boat out of the bay for $5,000, but they can't use the money for that. We have to wait till it sinks, and then you know you spend $200,000 or $300,000 on an emergency response, getting the boat floated, dealing with it after it's already sunk, and that's what happened with the Susan Diane that sank up at the city piers. Everybody knows this boat's in trouble. Nobody, and it's very awkward because there is an owner, so they're the ones who should bear the cost. So the state doesn't want to subsidize their cost, but the reality is they either don't have the money or they're not going to do it. So this was a case where we were able with these funds to get ahead of the problem, but I mean, statewide and locally, this remains a serious problem.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
What was the name of the Fish and Game Fund?
OSPR, the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, is the whole branch of Fish and Game that deals with this.
Okay.
I am blanking on the name of the fund. I know
no,
it
that's
comes
fine.
Out
that's all I need.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Is there a boat in Monterey Bay you want to get?
No.
We did work with OSPR, and they did get to the point where they said, if we can certify that a boat is a serious threat, it's really on the verge of sinking, they can, they will take the authority, effectively like a search warrant, to just go board the boat and pump all the fuel, all the oil-related stuff off it, diesel fuel, but it's still an environmental catastrophe. The boat sinks. You got batteries. You got hydraulic fluid. So they'll empty the diesel tanks for you if they agree that it's really on the verge of sinking. But they won't release. They won't open that fund to pull the boat out of the water.
But they'll spend $200,000 later.
Right. Once it sinks, then this whole emergency response thing goes in, which is incredibly expensive. So changing gears a little bit to some of our education and outreach efforts, we have a small but really wonderful nature center down near our office on the Embarcadero. Reaches a lot of tourists as well as locals. We produce a whole variety of publications aimed at different kinds of audiences. These are actually school children from the Central Valley that our outreach coordinator goes and gives them presentations. They come out and do a beach cleanup. It's a Coastal Commission program we participate in. Outreach to boaters, outreach to the general public, outreach to kayakers about not disturbing wildlife. This Bayside Living Guide is very much in kind of the stormwater vein. It's a whole booklet. It's about 30 pages of everyday changes that people who live around the bay can make to reduce, you know, save water, reduce their contribution to stormwater. I hope we've been sharing those with you guys. I think you're on the mailing list. If you want more copies, I'll certainly get them over. And then on the research front, there's a number of different things happening. Our own monitoring, both volunteer-based and more technical. The National Monitoring Program, which is over but continues to be really a valuable monitoring and research data source. The Water Board does a variety of research. The TMDL, the development of the TMDLs has provided a wealth of information for us in terms of what we should be doing, how we can be more effective, and then the CCAMP program. And then the Slow Sea program is really an exciting one that I know the regional board is participating in, and we're certainly in the middle of it. And it's really an alliance with Cal Poly doing really much more intensive kind of, it's an ecosystem-based management approach, but what it practically is on the ground is a series of really detailed research initiatives. Some of the things that we're getting out of it are a new bathymetry map of the bay, which is central to the sediment TMDL and understanding how effective we're being there, as well as they're putting in some really wonderful continuous monitoring arrays in the bay itself that are going to track nitrates, as well as a whole host of other things every 15 minutes, with the data being up on the web, anyone can use it, and also trying to get those in place in the creek mouths. Our volunteer program is very successful. It's essentially sort of an ambient program, but we get quite a bit of technical work out of the local community, and it's a wonderful outreach program as well. Some of the things we do: bacteria monitoring, dissolved oxygen, plankton pulls, creek surveys. These are Conservation Corps members that are a central partner with us. Some of the data, I apologize, this is a little hard to read from here. This was in our report card we produced on the state of the bay. These are the percentage of times at these sites that samples exceed the recreational contact standards for a single grab sample. It's a pretty sad picture. Most of our watershed sites, more than 25% of the time, these are just once-a-month samples over a couple of years. The water is not safe for recreational contact, according to I think we're using E. coli, so it's EPA's recommended standards rather than the actual fecal coliform standards. One of the interesting things on here is that our most downstream site at Twin Bridges is actually the cleanest in Choro Creek, and our only real explanation for it, it's just a hypothesis, is that the whole wetlands complex that's been restored at Choro Flats is doing what wetlands are always supposed to do, which is improve water quality as the water moves through it. Bacteria numbers for the bay, by far the worst sites are around the Baywood Peninsula, 25 to 35% of the time we sample. And this is the receiving water, the bay itself. It doesn't meet the single contact recommended standards. Here we're using Enterococcus, the EPA recommended standard for marine waters. Cleaner and some of our sites up here were, this was I think 17%. We're looking forward to seeing if water quality, if these numbers get better now that these boats are out of Windy Cove. We map eelgrass beds in the bay as a key indicator of the health of the bay itself and one of the really important and rare habitats that the estuary has. And this was a report card on the state of the bay, kind of reporting out in a very public-friendly way what we know about the current state of the system and what we're doing about it. And then I wanted to touch at closing here on finance. The big picture, I guess, I think one of the reasons we've been so successful is this kind of combination of funding sources. Because we're a national estuary program, we get an annual grant from EPA, and that has really provided a stable operational base. So we have professional staff, we have an office, we're not scrambling from year to year to keep ourselves running. And then that kind of stable operational program money combined with the restoration fund, which the regional board helped direct towards us, to implement our management plan. This has provided seed money to really get a lot of work done on the ground. And having having a stable organization and some seed money has made it a lot easier to get other funding, competitive grants, supplemental environmental projects to help our partners. With those restoration funds, we've allocated about $4.4 million, and that's leveraged, you know, projects worth about $26 million. So we're getting another $4 for every dollar we've put in. This is just with the restoration fund money. This is a kind of a breakdown of that. We've put, this is the allocations we've done, and then this is that $25 million pie. We've put about $1 million in the land acquisition, leveraged about $16 million from other sources. On the watershed restoration side, it's been more like a one-to-one leveraging. Monitoring, we haven't put much in from the restoration fund. It was really intended to go to on-the-ground work, but we've brought in, you know, a total of about $2 million towards monitoring efforts, and other smaller pieces of the pie here. I'm happy to go back to these if folks want to look at them in any more detail. And then kind of where we're at with that fund, the fund was not set up as an endowment. It has a spend-by date of coming up on us here of June 2009. Well, actually, by June 2009, we're supposed to have allocated all the money. It doesn't have to be spent yet, but have committed it towards specific projects. We've spent about $3 million. We have about $1.4 that's allocated towards a variety of projects, hasn't been spent. We have about $900,000 that's still free towards free for allocation. And that process is our executive committee and the Bay Foundation consider allocations, and then they get a final stamp of approval from the executive officer at the regional board. And if you're wondering why this adds up to five-something million when we started with 3.66, it's because the Bay Foundation invested it, and it's been growing even as we've been spending it. And I guess that's really it. I can mention a couple things related to partnerships with the regional board and current events. I recently learned that I'm going to be a member of the TAC that the county has formed to work on the Los Osos Wastewater Project, and that's a high-priority project in our implementation plan. This seems like an excellent opportunity for us to hopefully play a constructive role in trying to move that forward. And then we've been working recently with some of the TMDL staff. They're working on a three-year review, kind of status review of the pathogen and the sediment TMDL. So we've been sharing our data with them and talking both about monitoring data and then about the different implementation projects that are underway. What else have I got on that?
Dan.
And I guess that's really it. I'm happy to answer any questions folks have.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I wanted to, you were trying to think of other studies or other efforts. One of the long-term efforts that started back, I think, when Dave Paradis was directing the program, was looking at the Army Corps of Engineers and possibility for developing their some role for them in terms of the kinds of things that they do. And I've really lost track of that effort, but my understanding is that it really was halted, right? They came to a dead end on that effort. Can you give us just a little bit of a summary on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the core issues driving the formation of the NEP and one of our priority problem really has been that the bay is filling in very dramatically. Salt marsh has doubled in size. The bay is getting shallower, I mean, visibly shallower. And so we can work upstream to try and reduce erosion. We also, you know, the other main thing that we could do is go into the bay itself and dredge it, make it deeper as an environmental restoration project, or look at other things. What else, you know, dredging's the most obvious. Can we affect, you know, the hydrodynamics in the bay to help move sediment out of the bay, change the channel structure? So we entered into a restoration study with the Army Corps of Engineers, a formal agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers to look at this, because we figured if there was going to be a feasible project, it was going to be at the scale where we would need the Army Corps' help to do it as a key partner. We spent a number of years and quite a bit of money evaluating different alternatives, looking at the existing conditions, projecting future conditions. In the end, essentially what we came to realize was, well, one, that working with the Corps is a challenging and difficult process that costs a lot more than you think and takes a lot longer, although that wasn't really news sort of the par for the course. But the other was we got really valuable information about some of these different alternatives, and unfortunately the answers were, you know, dredging is certainly something we could do, but the financial scale of that kind of a project was just overwhelming. We were looking at $60 million to try and restore the bay, to, you know, even just back to what it had looked like 100 years ago. And you're dealing with an incredible amount of environmental impacts associated with that and trying to weigh those impacts versus the benefit of dredging. We decided to, once we realized the cost and combined with the environmental scope and the feedback we were getting from the community about, you know, the acceptance of a project like that, we moved away from that. We started looking at moving the, you know, potentially affecting the flow of the creeks into the estuary to get more sediment to move. It was been a theory for a long time that if we push Choro Creek back to its old channel where it came out closer to the entrance of the bay, maybe it would help move more of the sediment out of the system instead of depositing in the system. The Army Corps' analysis was basically no, that won't help. And I can't say that we have total agreement with that conclusion, but, you know, if they say it doesn't work, you know, trying to go around that and ask them to reevaluate it didn't seem like it was going to get us very far. So we've essentially decided that working upstream in the watershed is the approach that we're going to proceed with. And this is, you know, this was a road we needed to go down to investigate these options. The answer essentially was no, this isn't where we want to be going. And I really like an analogy that one of the scientist who's done, you know, some of the premier work on this issue, Morro Bay, used it. Working in the watershed, you know, it's like if you have an obesity problem, working in the watershed is the diet and exercise approach. You know, you're addressing the source of the problem. Dredging the bay is like liposuction. It's quick, it's very expensive, it's invasive, it's dangerous. And if you don't address the source, it's still not going to help you in the long run. So we're going to work upstream and address the source of the problem.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Any other questions from the board? No? It's nice to see things moving along in such an efficient and comprehensive way.
Thank you. Well, yeah, thanks for the opportunity to speak today.
Yeah, and it's good to see so much of the watershed kind of coming under some kind of management, you know, and control. So thank you. All right. Next item, number